wait till I get my money right. I had a dream I could buy my way to heaven. When I awoke, I spent that on a necklace. I told God I'll be back in a second. Man, it's so hard not to act reckless. To whom much is given, much is tested. Get arrested, guess until he get the message. I feel the pressure under more scrutiny. And what I do, act more stupidly. Bought more jewelry, more Louis V. My mama couldn't get through to me. The drama, people suing me. I'm on TV talking like...
Good afternoon. Live well and win well. It is On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes right here, News and Talk 1380 WAOK. And welcome to our special edition of our show on mental health in Black communities. We're so glad to have all of our guests sharing with us today as we discuss mental health in our Black communities, especially during COVID-19. And I want to welcome our guests from MindPath Care Centers, Carrie Mackey, also Deja Maynard, and Dr. James Smith. Good afternoon and welcome to On Point.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We're so glad to have you. Good afternoon. How are you all doing today? Can you hear me?
Not all at once.
you can go ahead all at once. How are you all doing today? You doing great?
We're doing great. Great.
That's good. That's good. Well, we're glad to have you sharing with us today as we're talking about. Many have said the first pandemic has actually been this COVID-19, but that there's really a second pandemic, and it's mental health. Talk to us about mental health in Black communities, just overall, before we even get to the discussion in COVID-19. What have you found to be a lot of the challenges when it comes to mental health, or even the discussion of mental health in Black communities?
Carrie, why don't you start us off?
All right, no problem. So one of the things that I've seen is, you know, and it's been something that's been around for a long time, is that there's an overwhelming stigma that shadows, you know, the mental health community. You know, a lot of people are fearful of seeking treatment because they are worried about the diagnoses that may be attached or the stereotypes that may be attached to an individual that may have a mental health diagnosis. And so a lot of times there's fear with even coming into a practitioner's office. And so I think that's like one of the biggest things, you know, to mention in terms of mental health in general, the stigma that's already attached to the profession.
That's good. Deja, what do you say about it?
I would definitely piggyback off of Carrie's comments, you know, the stigma sort of internal and, you know, that external connotation, the stereotypes among the population. I would also say the access to care, so the barriers to care, whether that is a cultural competency or inclusion in practices, can deter or have deterred, I guess, systemically, communities of color from accessing services.
Dr. James Smith, what would you say to add to what the others have already shared?
I'll give you a historical perspective. I've been at this game of psychiatry now my 44th year, and I am pleased to say that, yes, the stigma is still present, but African Americans have increasingly been well educated and are seeking mental health intervention at numbers much greater than 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And yes, Deja was correct. One of the struggles we still have is that we need clinicians that are culturally sensitive and understanding of the African American experience, and we still have struggles with that.
You said something that's very important, needing clinicians that are culturally sensitive of our community. What is it about the culture that clinicians need to have a sensitivity to?
Well, if I can jump in and they can respond also, I think its importance is that many of our clinicians are isolated from the Black world. Mm-hmm. They don't know the black experience. You know, we live with racism and other issues, poverty, poor health care at a much greater rate, our comorbidities and our other illnesses like hypertension, diabetes affect us greater, and the social determinants of health are significant. And young docs coming out of school this day, and even older docs, really don't really appreciate the impact that social determinants of health have on us as African Americans.
That's very good to know. Go ahead, Carrie.
Dr. Smith. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'd like to add to what Dr. Smith had to say about, you know, some of the social determinants of health. But when we talk about access of care, one of the things we see is, you know, the U.S. population is made up about 13% of African-American population. And then when we in turn look at the ratio of doctors or healthcare providers, it's about 4%. So we don't even have enough, you know, doctors to meet the need or the demand of, you know, of the African-American population. A lot of people feel comfortable with having a provider that, you know, that looks like them, you know, and understands their background, cultural information. And so we don't have enough healthcare professionals in general, you know, that are of minority groups to even treat, you know, the amount of people that may need benefit or assistance from us.
404-892-2703, Mental Health in Black Communities. We're speaking with Dr. James Smith, Deja Maynard, Carrie Mackey. They're from the Mind Path Care Centers. More to come as we talk about mental health in Black communities during COVID-19. If you have any questions, 404-892-2703. We'll be right back.
Far away from the life so young, that's when you used to know. Many dreams since then you've had them come.
Live well, win well. It is On Point with Wandalyn Stokes, Radio News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We're talking mental health in Black communities during COVID-19. And we have sharing with us MindPath's Medical Director Emeritus, Dr. James Smith, also Charlotte Therapist Deja Maynard, and Raleigh's Physician Assistant Carrie Mackey. All this discussion about mental health in Black communities. Before I ask your next question, I'm going to go to our phone lines. Todd from Atlanta has a question to our guest. Go ahead, Todd. Good afternoon.
Wandalyn.
Hi, how are you?
Pound of cauliflower, pound of green beans, and the 4 miles is down to 35 minutes. The bench press is the same. I don't want to talk about the bench press.
Okay.
James Smith, Deja Maynard, and Carrie, what is your last name?
Mackey.
Okay. I question as to why, when this topic comes up so much in the Black community, they use the word mental health when they're usually referencing mental unhealthiness. And I wanted to know, do you differentiate between somebody coming for counseling for the purpose of improving their already good mental health state versus someone coming for counseling who has a mental unhealthy state?
Panelists?
All right. Let me, if I understand your question, you're asking us what is the difference of an individual coming in that they feel fine and they want to improve themselves, like versus somebody that comes in that has emotional disorders?
Well, I'm saying I know that there is a difference, but when this topic comes up, they use the words mental health, and they're almost always referencing mental unhealthiness. And there are people that come for counseling that are in good mental state.
If I could just add a little, and then the others can chime in. For most of us, we don't really see individuals coming into the office that don't have an issue. So I in my career, I've not seen many people that have just said, look, I'm doing fine. I need to speak to you about how I can improve myself. That's more a life coach situation. As a psychiatrist, I don't really do life coaching. I treat individuals that are struggling with emotional issues.
Meaning
and
you're in a state of mental unhealthiness.
To my peers.
So you mean they're in a state of mental
unhealthiness? I can speak from the PA standpoint. So I have kind of like Dr. Smith, I treat people that, you know, have acute issues. Because of the therapeutic alliance that I form with my patients, eventually they get better because that's the goal, right? They come to us because they want to get better. So when they do get better and they're in the emotional state of, you know, having a good mental well-being and want to continue to improve, that's often when I'll do a referral to a therapist to kind of help them to develop strategic techniques and skills to maintain their mental state, their current mental state. And then, you know, from there, that's when they would adapt and probably acquire a life coach to help them to stay on that positive trajectory.
Thank you. David from Atlanta has a question. Go right ahead, David. Good afternoon. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, good afternoon, Ms. Wanda and his guest, Ms. Smith or Mr. Smith were Maynard and Maggie, if I remember it correctly. Okay, I was thinking about anxiety and anger, I guess, how they relate to mental health. And I'm bringing it up to me for my own experience because I guess certain family members thought it was funny that, like, I was crazy growing up. And I never understood why. So I guess it became a joke. I used to wonder why they would say that. And then I thought about one time they even got the nerve to want to carry me to somewhere to ask you to talk to me. And it was based. Hello?
Yes, we're here. Hello? Go ahead.
Okay, my phone started ringing. I'm sorry. And it was based on a lie. But the problem is my grandmother always wanted me to get my brothers them to start a family business. So I was the one always trying to get everybody to do the business, blah, blah, blah. And I guess they got tired of it. But I would get frustrated by it. And then I guess wouldn't talk a lot to them because I couldn't understand what was wrong with trying to start a family business. So in turn, I guess I get labeled crazy or whatever with no evidence. So I never would want to go anywhere to talk to anyone basically because of, like you're saying, that label. But the times that they wanted me to go somewhere, I had bought some land. They didn't believe it was my land. Didn't research it or anything. So now when I agree to find out what they want to go talk about, I find myself in the office, and they wonder why I'm on this land, and it wasn't mine, but it was my land. So I asked the psychiatrist, could y'all tell the difference between anger and frustration? And they said no. But that's what I was angry about. I was angry, why didn't y'all want to go in business? So how do we get these labels, and is the anxiety I probably got from that, how could that be labeled as a mental illness or whatever, and is anxiety a mental illness? So that's my question.
Thank you for your question. Go right ahead, Guess.
Well, if I could just add my two cents, you know, while we can't specifically talk about your situation, we certainly do see people with emotions that may have concerns to loved ones around them. I'm hoping they meant well, but the reality is this, family a lot of times may be well-meaning and it may get misinterpreted, but we as mental health professionals, we're doing our very best to be ethical in our behavior, ethical in our diagnosis, and ethical in our treatment. So I'm sorry you had that experience, but the reality is we do our very best to be completely ethical.
Panelists, what mental and behavioral health conditions are you seeing most frequently due to COVID-19?
Deja, how about you take that one?
Thank you, Dr. Smith, and that's a great question. I would say the COVID-19 outbreak is really exacerbating concerns regarding anxiety. So that sort of uncontrollable and persistent worry, so just sort of feeling on edge or dreadful that something just like bad is going to happen or you can't control this. And depression, definitely in terms of not the uncertainty of the course of the pandemic and the sort of implications to the future, as well as even the grief associated with the loss of different, you know, activities or social groups or even, you know, loved ones have really been prominent as it relates to my practice and what I've seen regarding the pandemic.
Okay. Anyone else like to elaborate on that from our panel?
I think even before COVID, depression and anxiety were the two most common psychiatric diagnoses that are, that are seen across practices in the U.S. And so there's been a further exacerbation of both of them, due to circumstantial situations currently and environmental changes that we've had to face. And then the changes, of a schedule, this impacts individuals, the gyms closing, people not being able to bond socially, and having to keep the social distance has added a level of increased anxiety and depression. And so definitely those two diagnoses are being seen more in the practice now than even before.
We're going to ask our panelists, hold on just a second. I'll go to break and I'll get your comment right when we come back as we continue this discussion about mental health in Black communities. Right here, News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
I was stupid, really stupid. Something told me deep inside, better not do it. What a dummy. Such a dummy to let some mess.
Live well, win well is on point with Wandalyn Stokes, mental health in Black communities, with the director, medical director emeritus of MindPath's medical director, Dr. Smith, James Smith, also Charlotte therapist Deja Maynard, and Raleigh physician assistant Carrie Mackey. Let's go to our phone lines. Gail from Atlanta has a question for our panelists. Go ahead, Gail. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is, I feel like I'm not really anxiety that I'm experiencing as a result of the COVID, but more worry, especially when I have to go grocery shopping. I have this, I don't know what is scared, or I just don't trust everybody. I just can't shop like I used to. And what is going on? Am I in anxiety mode, or am I just, I don't know how to identify it when I go grocery shopping. I just have my mask on and I get this overwhelming worry of get in here, get out, because, something's going to get you or something.
Thank you for your question, Gail. Panelists, yes. How do you respond?
I'll jump in. I understand, young lady. It is anxiety. Worry is anxiety. And it is appropriate to be anxious. And you're having a normal reaction to a real world situation. I mean, this is a pandemic. People are getting very sick, and African Americans are dying at a higher percentage. So your emotional reactions of your fear when you go in there is appropriate. But I recommend doing some deep breathing and some meditation before you go in. Make sure you have your mask on. Make sure you've got some hand sanitizer, and get in there in the morning before the crowd's there, and do your very best to get through this difficult time.
Thank you so much, Doctor, for answering that question. What are some tips or advice that you give the Black community to help them to cope with this virus? Like those who are dealing with depression, those who are dealing with anxiety, panic. What advice and tips do you all give?
Major, why don't you get start off?
Well, the very first tip that I would give is to encourage people to extend grace to themselves. And sort of recognize, normalize what they're going through, just as, Dr. Smith was speaking to that caller to do, that this anxiety and this depression and all these other emotions and feelings are warranted in this time. The second tip I would give is to consider your boundaries or sort of your limits in terms of how much COVID and COVID-related information and content you're interacting with. And the last tip I would give is to encourage people to be intentional about doing the things that actually help to decrease or improve their mood, at least, some amount of time every day. That's sort of where those coping skills and interest and hobbies come in.
And what are some of those coping skills, briefly, that you would suggest?
I would add to Deja's coping skills. You know, I like to tell people to think about, you know, a lot of what you're dealing with as, you know, an individual having this 8-ounce cup. And, you know, inside that cup, you can put a solution in it. But that cup can fill up really quickly. And so if you don't pour that cup into reserve, then you start to have all of these issues spill out into different aspects of your life. So one of the things I would say is, you know, to think of your mental health professional as a reserve, because we have really big buckets that you can pour your solution out into. And treatment doesn't always mean medicine per se. There are therapeutic approaches like cognitive behavioral therapy, talk therapy, mindful meditation, like Dr. Smith mentioned, healthy living and lifestyle, so exercises, dieting properly, communication with family members, or even emotional support animals, so spending time walking the dog or the cat, you know, petting the cat. So definitely finding, you know, those coping skills, deep breathing, to help assist you in this tumultuous time.
What do you say to those who are actually dealing with this whole process of loss and grief? Loss of job, grief over the loss of jobs, and also with loved ones, the loss of loved ones, not being able to have those final moments with loved ones during this COVID-19. What do you all say to that?
I personally would ask each and every one of our listeners to look in their area, see whether or not there are telehealth or mental health providers in your area that they could reach out to and get an opportunity to have some time with the therapist to be able to work through these feelings, whether it's depression, anxiety, anger because they couldn't be there for their loved one. And I think I'm hoping in your area we have mental health professionals that are using telemedicine to make a difference. And that would be my first step. Deja, Carrie?
Well, to add to that, I would encourage people to sort of lean on their communities for support. You know,
speak a little bit closer into the phone, Deja. Speak a little bit closer into. Thank you so much.
My apologies.
Okay. No problem.
I was actually just going to say, you know, encouraging people to get in with community or, you know, sort of like leaning on their support system, whether that be professionally, as, you know, Dr. Smith was just outlining, or just personally, and that grief is a universal, especially, you know, when grieving a person. Grief is a collective experience, and so having the support of people to sort of validate and normalize what you're going through, as well as include in the healing process, can be really powerful for people.
Thank you. Carrie, what do you say, advice you give to people who are tired of being sheltered in, tired of being quarantined and got to get out, but still dealing with, you know, just the dynamics of that socially? What advice, what direction do you give individuals who are dealing with that?
All right. So that fear of going out is definitely present for a lot of individuals. I even have some reservations myself, you know, just because, you know, you see all that's went on and all that's happening out there in the community. So first and foremost, I would say take the health precautions tips. You know, if you're going into big crowded areas, you know, that's probably not a good idea. So maybe going out into smaller groups of less than 10, making sure that you wear your protective equipment, your mask, frequent hand washing as we should be doing, keeping a sanitizer with you. You know, if you're taking the health precautionary measures, then you don't have as much of a chance or likelihood of contracting COVID. And so definitely I would say, you know, stay conscientious of the health things and then try to do things in smaller groups as possible. You know, as things start to open up, I would encourage people to go, you know, and start to transition and do things, you know, a little at a time instead of kind of jumping back into the normal routine and regimen.
Valerie from Atlanta has a question for our guest. Good afternoon, Valerie. Welcome to On Point.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
Oh, well, hi to everyone. I actually had a comment, and it was for like one of your previous callers who said she has these anxieties when she goes to the grocery store. She may want to look into delivery services like DoorDash and Postmates. mm-hmm. and she can have these things brought to her door, and they actually do what's called a no-contact delivery. So,
okay.
you know, that is something for people like her to think about, because I feel her and I understand. I actually do the deliveries myself.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't have to come in contact with the customer, and that's good for people like her. So she may want to try that.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Mike from Clinton, Maryland. Hi.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Our guest's on the line. Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, so I wanted to know, how can parents help children cope with not being able to live as normal, not being able to see our friends and things like that? And what can we do to help that situation and help our friends? And
all right, that's a good question. Hold tight a second. I'm going to have the panelists to answer your questions, okay? Hold a moment. We'll be right back right after these commercials. It's 404-892-2703 on point and right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Well, it's on point with Wandalyn Stokes right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We're talking about mental health in Black communities. Mike and Miska, you all still on the line?
Yes.
Okay, ask your question again. Dr. Smith, I'm going to have you to respond to these questions. Go ahead, ask your questions again.
Okay, so how can parents help children cope through these tough times? Because nowadays, on our Zoom meetings, we're getting a lot of electronic time, and that can mess with our behavior, sleep patterns. I mean, how can we keep ourselves from falling into this endless fall of stress and things like that? And what can we do to help our friends?
Well,
good questions.
If I can say without any hesitation, spending time on Duo with your peers, your friends does help. Encouraging your parents to think of activities that you can do in the house that are fun, whether that's cooking, whether that's building a fort, while that's doing something creative, putting together a puzzle that the family can do. These family interactive projects are the very best to help you deal with the stress of social isolation. And there are times where sometimes Zoom can be overwhelming, but it's also helpful for Zoom or Duo to be able, if you have a favorite grandfather or grandmother or an uncle or an aunt, to be able to reach out to somebody like that. And I'm hoping also in your neighborhood that you can put your mask on and get outside and enjoy some fresh air. And not be cooped up. That doesn't mean you're going to run around the block, but at least be outside in a way that you can be safe and enjoy some fresh air.
Thank you for your questions. Reverend Johnson of Atlanta, go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Wandalyn? Miss Stokes, how are you?
I'm great. You doing good?
Yes, ma'am. First of all, I just want to thank your panel for their professionalism and their research, and most of all, their information. And I encourage everybody to follow what these leaders say that we need to do. But if you would allow me, I would like to give a comment from the Bible. And there was such a time when Jesus, the people that was around him, even when they seen him do all kind of miracles, for whatever reason, they did not believe, and some did not believe, and he basically answered every question. But in these times, there are just some questions that, just like back then, that it seems like there's no answer to, no way out. And what Jesus told them in the book of John, chapter 14 and verse 27, he told them, he said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, I give unto you." Then he says, "Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." So I just want to, you know, give that to anybody, and I pray that somebody would receive it in their mind and in their spirit, and it will help them through these tough times.
Okay. Thank you so much, Reverend Johnson. Thank you. Stay healthy, stay connected. Ron from Atlanta, welcome. Our guest on the line. Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you for this conversation of mental health. Can you talk to us about, it seems that our families and the time that we're able to spend together in this pandemic is getting further and further apart. But what about the words that we hear that causes fear, economical fear, and even food, like food deserts, or even having the profanity? How can we combat the frustration when we have bad language? Can you talk about how important it is to focus on gentleness and kindness?
Thank you for your questions, Carrie and Deja. Go right ahead.
Right. And so I always respond with the motto or the mindset of each one, reach one, teach one. Right. And mm-hmm. so, you know, knowing that the resources in our community, you know, are there, like you alluded to, like the food banks and stuff earlier. So when you look at the, you know, the disbursement of where food banks are, and, you know, you look at the dynamics in terms of drinking waters in our communities, you know, the health disparities that are already there in our communities. We're already at a disadvantage. And so if you or somebody you know has access to some resource, you know, sharing that information with the community, with your family members and your friends, you know, is definitely one step that we can kind of take. I know that the food banks in the areas have kind of ramped up, you know, and then probably tacking into like your local church groups or, you know, or your community centers and seeing what resources they have that may be available to their disposal to assist people with the community. So kind of just sharing and caring, you know, a little bit of kindness goes a long way. So if we have anything in excess, possibly reaching out to those around us to share that information or to even share a meal with them at this point in time will go a long way for individuals.
Thank Amen. You, Deja. You have any response to that as well? Any comments?
Yes, I would actually just, you know, the caller team is really talking about ways to develop resiliency, which is, you know, the ability to persevere through really challenging and difficult times such as this. And so, you know, trying to connect to what makes us feel good in terms of maintaining that positivity is absolutely a really significant part of that. And I think that really can start with expressing gratitude just in general, you know, being mindful or intentional about identifying the things that you are grateful for in such an unprecedented time can be helpful.
Thank you. Panelists, what do you say to the mindset who's thinking, first of all, that they're sick and tired of hearing about COVID-19, and then secondly, they're put it out of their minds that it doesn't really exist so they can go back to life as normal? What do you say to that type of mindset? What's happening there?
Well, unfortunately, normal is not normal. And until we see a well-tested and proven treatments for COVID-19 and a vaccination, it's going to be very hard for any of us to call, I'm getting back to my regular routine. We mm-hmm. are creatures of habit. We love our routines. But we can modify them, as you heard Deja say and you've heard Kerry say. We can modify. The mask is such a small issue. It does so much. A little hand sanitizer and the mask. And I ask folks also, please, just take a little bit of the news a day. Don't keep it on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. Take a break from the news and pace yourself.
Thank you. Any final thoughts from the three of you? We'll start with Deja Maynard. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, so this conversation was well needed, and I'm really appreciative of being able to be a part of it. My final, I guess, parting word would just be empathy is really significant. Grace is really significant. Being able to recognize, you know, how you're feeling and lean into that
and respond to it is going to be really powerful to be able to get through this thing.
Thank you. Carrie Mackey, final thoughts.
I would say that, you know, perspective is everything. The way that we view things, the way that we analyze these situations, you know, our perspective takes us a long way. And so I've taken this time to look at, you know, being able to reestablish and reconnect with family members that I might not have talked to when I had my consistent schedule. So now that's become a part of my new norm, a part of my schedule. I've been able to decorate my balcony and put shades up, Drake. So that's become a part of my new schedule, something that, you know, I'm interested in doing. And so finding things to incorporate in your new schedule, you can still have a schedule because that's what everybody's asking for.
Yeah, but just do
you
something
just have
new.
To find new ways to incorporate and change your schedule from what it was
true.
Before. So you can still have a schedule.
But it's got to be something new. Dr. James Smith, final thoughts.
We are creative.
Okay, Dr. James Smith.
We're very creative people. I would say we're very creative people. And we can do this, everybody. Pace yourself, please. Be creative. Enjoy your family. Read your Bible. Meditate. All those things make a huge difference in one's life. And have faith. And that's it.
Thank you so much. We certainly appreciate all of you, Dr. James Smith, Deja Maynard, Carrie Mackey. Listen, for more information, go to www.mindpathcare.com. They have a blog, they have a video, a discussion all about it. Thank you so much, Mental Health in Black Communities During COVID-19. We appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. It's been all good. It's been great
Thank
today.
You.
Guess what? We'll be back on tomorrow. You're welcome. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. So have a good one. This is your friend and sister girl, Wanda Lynn Stokes, always keeping you on point. I'm out of here.